You are listening to the audio production of Nightbird Calling by Kathy Golke, published by Tyndale House Publishers. This book is read by Marguerite Gavin. For Jesse Stephen Gardner, whose name aptly means gift and crown, you are joy, adventure, and discovery to me, beloved grandson, all my love forever. Chapter 1. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, May 1941. My mother was a beautiful woman, a magnificent and generous woman who loved music and poetry and literature and gardens. She loved to dance, though she only ever did so in the privacy of her room, with me. Her smile, though rare in her last months, brightened the sun. She was a devoted wife and loving mother, however ill-used by her husband. If anyone says differently, they're a liar or misled by my father. Mama loved lilacs and roses and the call of the whippoorwill to keep her company in the dead of night, a memory she treasured from her childhood. She once told me that God in his heaven must think we mortals cannot sustain the wonder of such heady fragrance for long. That's why lilacs bloom only in spring and for so short a time. It's the reason roses must have two seasons to spread their blessed gifts. It's why whippoorwills don't sing all year long in the North Carolina mountain air. The fragrance of those flowers filled her room as she squeezed my hand for the last time and closed her eyes. I didn't want her to go, and yet begging her to stay would have been selfish. At long last, she had a chance to be free. Of course she should take it. Mama left me with two directives. One, to take care of myself, no matter the cost to my reputation. Two, when I found myself brave enough, I was to hand-deliver a ruby ring to her Aunt Hyacinth in No Creek, North Carolina, a ruby ring that Mama said she'd taken when she ran off to marry my father. She didn't explain why she'd taken the ring, or what she meant by taking care of myself heedless of my reputation, but she made me swear to do both and to never tell my father or my husband. I swore, for she was dying, though I had no idea how I'd ever fulfill such vows. Gerald no more let me out of his sight than my father had allowed my mother from his. I'd sewn the ring and Grand Aunt Hyacinth's address into the lining of my purse, so I'd have them with me always and out of my husband's sight. Gerald was known to rifle through my closet and chest of drawers in search of my diary, or some stray clue to my faithlessness, suspicious of my every move as he was. I never gave him cause, but his constant surveillance and recriminations made me feel as if I'd done something soiled and dirty, and that made me jumpy. How soiled and dirty can a woman get going to the market, or the library, or to church? It was much the way my mama had lived, and I'd been raised. Only I truly believed that marriage to Gerald, a man 10 years my senior who'd seemed so godly and smitten with me, might be different. He might love me, might be glad to share a new life. 7 years had taught me otherwise. Year round, no matter the heat of the summer, I wore long sleeves to cover the evidence of my husband's displeasure and disappointment, and the result of his bursts of anger, which were inevitably my fault. At least now Mama was free of my father and free of worry for me. The temptation to join such freedom was compelling, like the feeling you get when standing too close to the ledge of a high building or leaning beyond a sharp cliff that hangs over the sea. It pulls and pulls. One small step is all it would take. The thing that held me back was not fear of death, nor even eternity in my condemned state, but fear that I might not be successful, and then I would be forever at Gerald's mercy, as Mama had been at the mercy of my father. Mercy, where there is none. Dusk had fallen by the time I'd hung the last dripping tea.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?